Welcome to Soccer in 60, presented by the Empire Strikers. Get ready for your weekly look at all the pro soccer teams in Greater Los Angeles. We've got all the news and analysis you need, from LAFC and the LA Galaxy to the Empire Strikers, Angel City FC, and Orange County Soccer Club. Now, buckle up and enjoy Soccer in 60. Welcome back, folks, to another edition of Soccer in 60, your bird's eye look into the world of pro soccer here in Greater Los Angeles. And once again, on another tantalizing Thirsty Thursday, we are back to invade your auditory canals with footy and hijinks. My name is Christian Philemon, better known as Philly, and joining me, Tim Kolatz. Timmy K, how's your day?
Philly, I'm doing great, my friend. It's been a great week of footy here in SoCal, and while the rains finally came to the area, none of the locals had rain on their parades this week, and I can't wait to get into it with you with LA Galaxy bringing in another rising star, LAFC, which you're going to cover heavy duty, reloading with co-president and GM John Thorington working exceedingly hard this offseason. Empire Strikers earning points in their last two matches. A great interview with sporting director Mark Parsons is on tap. And Orange County has got they're a little light on the news, but when they do it, they sign some heavy hitters. Philly, man, things are great.
Yeah, it's the Lunar New Year. January 29th was the Lunar New Year, and that's the year of the snake. And while most people might be afraid of the serpent in the Eastern world, Eastern philosophy, the snake is heavily revered. So what the snake brings with it, a new year full of rejuvenations and renewals. Tim, I was year of the monkey. Do you know what year you were as far as the lunar calendar is concerned?
Woof. I'm the year of the dog.
Arr, groovy, baby. But yeah, I'm rejuvenated. I'm renewing. And, you know, it's been a crazy January for me, Tim. Very, very busy. And people ask me, Philly, how crazy? Pretty darn crazy. I mean, it was just bonkers from get to go. 18 broadcasts throughout this entire month. It's been wild. For those of you who don't know why Tim's laughing, I'm wearing that Groucho Marx nose.
Hey, I need a cigar, eyes. Philly.
Yeah. So just you know, like I said, they're coming to take me away. Anyway, so that's
yep. And there is another thing on the docket that we just saw. Our friend of the show, Kevin Baxter, wrote a great article in the LA Times regarding the World Cup and visas for 6 million people trying to come into this. It's pretty interesting because right now visas to get into the U.S. are currently running at about 330 days. So if you don't have a visa and you're coming from Germany, you better get it in soon because otherwise, you're not going to make it to the games.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. A lot of crazy things going on. I mean, we talk about P1 visas in the Major Arena Soccer League, how difficult they were during the previous administrations. It'll be even tougher right now. Will we ever see Genaro Castillo? I don't know. But with that being said, let's move on. And before we do, we got to pay the bills. So Omnitrans, you're on deck. Heading to the game? Hop aboard Omnitrans for a seamless journey to Toyota Arena. Simply download the transit app to catch your bus and enjoy a stress-free trip on the Strikers. Let's go, Empire. With that being said, we go into LAFC. Now, Tim, last week we spoke upon speculation and we spoke upon the reporting of people by the likes of Tom Bogart, so on and so forth. But now we can say that things are officially official in the world of LAFC. And what we mean by that, Matty Bogish is off to Liga MX. He's off to Mexico City, and he's off to Cruz Azul for a reportedly fee of over $10 million, which would actually make this one of the biggest transfers. Diego Rossi, when he was sent off to Fenerbahce in the Turkish Super League, was a big deal as well. But this deal for Matty Bogish, kind of insane. So something that we didn't want to see happen, but from a business perspective, it made sense. Look, Matty, 20 goals across 48 games in all competitions. He really did his thing. Second leading scorer behind Denny Bawanga this past season, earned himself a cap with the Polish national team, getting to start alongside the likes of the legendary Robert Lewandowski. Was a big year for Matty Bogish. And for LAFC, $10 million, they've always wanted to be a development club where they bring in talent improve them and sell them. And while Matty did come from a big team in that of Leeds, we sold them for a nice fee. I know LAFC fans aren't thrilled about losing Matty Bogusch. He's going to be thrilled going off to Mexico City. And he rejoins him, by the way, his old teammate, Omar Campos.
Yeah, I think it's. I think the LAFC fans, you hit it on the head. They're not going to be happy losing 20 goals across all competitions. But LAFC, I think they did what's right for the club long term on this one. And we'll get into this more later with the GAM and all the other numbers. But the money that they collect in, I'm just wondering, where's that money go, Philly? Do we really know?
Well, I mean, the money that they got, they're obviously, so every team starts out with a certain amount of GAM and TAM, and you can trade the GAM, but you can't trade the TAM. This is an alphabet soup we're absolutely going to have to dig into before the season starts, and the season start right around the corner. So we're really going to have to pre-plan this one pretty heavily, Tim. And this goes out to our producer Gunner as well. So we'll talk more about that later. But look, LAFC signings are not over. Obviously, the big one that we keep hoping for, fingers crossed, is a reunion between Carlos Vela and Antoine Griezmann. Whether or not it'll happen, I don't know, but they definitely have the money to do it. John Thorrington in an interview recently said, look, there's going to be some really big announcements that people are going to be happy about with Carlos Vela. So we'll see. The story for Vela at LAFC is not over. And Thorrington also did mention the fact that this might be one of the deepest LAFC teams ever once all is said and done. And that being the case, Tim, another official signing. We mentioned it briefly last week. Yaw Yeboah. LAFC signs him to a 2-year contract through 2026 with an option for 27. LAFC did acquire his rights from San Diego FC in exchange for $50,000 in general allocation money. Why, do you ask, they had to go to San Diego? Well, it's simple, because Yeboah was picked in stage 2 of the MLS 2024 reentry draft by San Diego. So he's going to occupy an international spot. Kids Young's got talent, 27 years old, Ghanaian international, last 3 seasons with the Crew. And LAFC fans will remember him because, well, he scored a freaking goal against them in Columbus in 2023. So that makes that official. The only other bit of LAFC news to really hit up, LAFC did play a preseason closed door match against the San Jose Earthquakes at the time of this recording. And guess what? Olivier Giroud finally scores himself a goal in something that's not U.S. Open Cup. So congratulations on Giroud. Will this be more to come? We don't know. But LAFC's upcoming matches, Sunday, February 2nd, they're going to be playing Phoenix Rising. They'll be in Indio at Coachella taking on the Chicago Fire on Wednesday, February the 5th at 1:30 Pacific Standard Time. That's going to be the only game that LAFC plays in Indio. You're going to be talking a lot about the Galaxy. Galaxy have 4 matches. Well, makes sense. AEG, Galaxy, you got that. Tuesday, February 11th, tickets are still available. LAFC friendly against Club America. It'll be the second time that LAFC meets up with the Giants of Liga MX. The last time around, LAFC did manage to beat Club America in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, but did lose Edward Atuesta, which would prove to bite them in the rear end in that finals against Tigres. Anyways, and then a game that you should be very excited about, Timbo. LAFC is going to be playing Orange County in a friendly on February the 12th. All this before the 18th, in which LAFC will head to Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Commerce City, Colorado, to take on the Rapids on the 18th. They open up the stadium and they open up BMO against the Loons, Minnesota United. And then February 25th, they host their CONCACAF Champions Cup match against the Colorado Rapids. So while we're enjoying not having too much to talk about as far as LAFC and all that stuff today, season's right around the corner, bro.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good season, and I'm going to love making the trek northward on the freeway to go see the Orange County boys go take on the Galaxy at Dignity Health Sports Park. I think that's going to be a rip. I do want to say something about, I had a little joke about Yeboah coming to the Crew. If you can't beat them, grab some of their guys. But I think Yeboah is going to be a really nice addition to LAFC. I think it's going to be really fun for the fans to see him playing in black and gold and defending that goal and maybe putting a couple of biscuits in the basket for the LAFC fans.
Oh, you're talking to a man who hasn't had dinner yet. Biscuits would be so good right now. In particular, those Red Lobster biscuits. But, rest in peace to Red Lobster. Now, we got some Galaxy stuff to talk about, but, you know, Tim, there was also some interesting news that took place between all the clubs in Major League Soccer. As reported by Tom Bogert, the way that the Champions Cup, the League's Cup, and the U.S. Open Cup are going to be laid out, it's going to be quite interesting. Clubs are going to get to at least compete in one of these tournaments, no more than two in these three cup competitions. And what MLS is trying to do, without saying they want to avoid a cash grab but still keep a cash grab going, is we're going to avoid schedule congestion. That's the idea behind all of this. So not sure if you got to take a look at this, but both LAFC and the Galaxy will be playing in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. That's by way of merit. And then the League's Cup as well. That was based on previous season standing. What are your immediate thoughts upon hearing this news without us digging into the weeds?
I kind of like it, because what you're seeing is you're not seeing full stadiums at some of these games. Now, I get it. You put in, you know, cheeks and seats for $10 at a BMO or at a Dignity Health sports park. But the reality is you're not going to do that on a Tuesday night in L.A. You're just not going to get people there. And while you will get a few stands, people in the stands, I think it's actually going to be better for MLS. It might be a little bit of a detriment to some of the smaller division clubs that don't get to see somebody come in and play in, say, like a 5,000 or 6,000 seat stadium. But I think initially, I think it's actually going to be better for MLS as a whole.
Yeah, a lot of people are still very angry about the League's Cup. They're trying to tweak it and do everything they can with it. CONCACAF Champions Cup, like, that's the big tournament in the area. No question about that. The teams that are there are based on merit. Whether you win the Supporters Shield, the MLS Cup, you finish top of the West, top of the East, you win the Canadian Cup, the U.S. Open Cup, like, several ways to get in. This is important. League's Cup, just a brand new tournament. Now, 18 teams will be in this out of MLS. And, well, that's just about as many teams as there are in Liga MX. So that, again, was done by way of previous season standings. With the exception of San Diego FC, this is their inaugural year. The thing that bites, in my opinion, Tim, is the fact that LAFC will not be able to defend their U.S. Open Cup. They're already in two of these. LAFC 2 will be in there competing on behalf of the Black and Gold. But that's going to be something that happens. It kind of stinks. But at least MLS is throwing some more teams in the U.S. Open Cup. They had 8 last year. At least they'll have 16 this year.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing for MLS to be back heavily into the U.S. Open Cup, because I know that when a previous iteration of the Orange County Soccer Club, the Blues, were playing, I actually know a guy that played keeper on the Blues. And they went in and beat the Portland Timbers. So that was pretty fun. You know, this is 100 years ago, but it was pretty cool to see one of these smaller clubs go in and really take it to an MLS club. Albeit maybe they didn't have, you know, their the exact starting 11 that they would line up against LAFC. But I think the reality is when you put 16 teams in, you're going to get some very high competition. And that can only be a benefit to USL Championship or to some of these other leagues that are putting teams into US Open Cup. And I think that is something good for MLS.
If you were truly serious about 100 years ago, the cool thing about the US Open Cup tournament, it was going on 100 years ago. And quick pop question for you. What year, or at least what team, was the last non-MLS team to win the US Open Cup?
That is a very good question. I am not sure. Who was it, Philly?
1999, the Rochester Raging Rhinos defeated the Colorado Rapids by a score of 2-0. So that was the last time a non-MLS team won the U.S. Open Cup. That's a fun one. But anyway, we're not here to talk anymore about that. I've given too much kudos to the Colorado Rapids. Let's get into your favorite team, the defending champions.
Yeah, so the defending champions, we've been talking about these guys, and they're starting to stock up on some really strong young talent. So when I mentioned this the other day, a couple of people thought it was the other brother, but the Galaxy have actually picked up Elijah Winder from Louisville City FC. This guy is the 2024 USL Championship Young Player of the Year, and this guy is a stud. You know, at just 21 years old, he's already got 84 appearances across all competitions, 55 of them starts. So with somebody like that, with this type of talent coming in, 32 starts last year and came off the bench in another match. He's got really high-end game experience, and to see him come out and compete for some of these spots with the LA Galaxy, this is going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, we talked about pop quizzes and fun facts. Elijah is actually the very first Louisville FC Academy player to sign professionally. And get this, he signed in late 2020 when the dude was just 17. So if he's signing professional contracts at 17, you know the guy is going to be good, right, Philly?
You would at least hope. I mean, it's just interesting how the world of football has just opened that up for so many prodigies. I mean, here in the United States, as we know, most kids don't go pro, at least until like the NBA. There is a draft. Most of these kids have to go to college. But soccer has provided them an outlet to where if they're solid enough, they don't have to. But then you'll still see some of these kids go academy or heck, even play NISA. I think Cal United Strikers had a kid that they ended up sending to play in the Big West. I think he played at Santa Barbara. I forget. I'd have to remember that. But at 17 years old, signing a pro contract. Holy Fresno Toledo. Unbelievable. I was... I hate to tell you what I was doing at 17. I was playing sports, but not at that level. Shoot.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like you say, you know, NISA and, you know, a lot of these guys, like even coming out of Orange County, they'll send them over to the Danish Elite League or over into Bundesliga 2 or La Liga 2. There's a couple of guys coming out of USL Championship that went into La Liga 2 and were starting right away. So it's good stuff. But the Galaxy continue to stock up on some other young talent, too. You know, we mentioned this a little bit, but Ansel Asenga and also Eric Zavaleta have signed with the club. And Asenga comes to the Galaxy, you know, to the senior club after making his mark the last four seasons with the G's second team in USL Championship. So between Ventura City and Galaxy 2, he's got a wealth of experience. He knows what he's doing on the pitch, and I think if he keeps staying at this level, I think he's going to make the senior club on a consistent basis and get in some very good playing time with the senior club over at Dignity Health Sports Park.
Marcus Lee, that's the name of the player. 15 years old, out of Cal United, plays at UC Irvine. Sorry, I digressed. It was just killing me that I didn't remember it. Look, yep. I mean, for Galaxy fans, you got to trust in Will Kuntz. What Will Kuntz has done for the club is nothing short of miraculous, considering how the season prior, all hell was breaking loose within the club, both from a supporter's perspective and a front office perspective. You fast forward a year and change later, all of a sudden, the race to SACE is complete. Trust in Will Kuntz. Maybe they're not getting the splashy signings that one would want coming out of Europe or whatever, but they're doing what I think most MLS clubs need to do, and that's sign young talent, develop them, and sell them off, not just constantly go after the older proven talent, which oddly enough is something LAFC has been focusing on a lot more than the Galaxy has. I mean, with the exception of Marco Royce, which is still a signing that I don't necessarily agree with. Just you saw what impact he had and how little he played. I mean, that's Marco Royce the past couple of years, but that's a story there.
Right. And then we're trying not to bury the lead here because it's not going to happen until 2026, just before the World Cup. But LA Galaxy legend and friend of the show that was on just during the Copa America, Kobe Jones, will be immortalized in Legends Plaza at Dignity Health Sports Park. The statue of Kobe Jones is still in the design phase, but it will be unveiled in time for the World Cup in 2026. So we're going to have to wait a while for it. However, it will be out there in Legends Plaza. And he's going to join a couple other local legends here. You know, some dude named Landon and some British guy named David Beckham. So, you know, it's going to be very, very cool to have these two guys standing right next to Kobe. And I hope they do something great with his hair. And he's got that big flock of hair rolling out the back.
I mean, the guy deserves it. A legend on the field and off the field as well, both for club and for country. I mean, scored the first ever Galaxy goal in history. I mean, well deserved. I don't know if you've ever saw the James Corden David Beckham statue prank. If you haven't, I highly suggest you do it. Hilarious. I wonder if they were going to do something similar to for Kobe Jones. That would be hilarious. But anyway, that ends our segment with the Galaxy. Before we head on over to talk some Empire, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. What time is it? It's bill paying time. Soccer in 60, our show, is brought to you by National Core, one of the nation's largest nonprofit affordable housing developers and proud sponsor of your MASL team, the Empire Strikers. At National Core, they believe that soccer has the power to transform lives just like they do. They believe in building strong communities on and off the field. To learn more about National Core and their mission, go to nationalcore.org. And speaking of missions, what head coach Onoo Obasi is doing this season, Tim, with the Empire Strikers, is so far his mission's looking pretty good, huh?
Yeah, it's looking good. You know, we had Coach Obasi on last week, and what he's doing with this team and how he's gotten them feeling, oh, I'm liking it. And if you haven't been out to the matches yet, you got to get there. These are big-time games, and to see the Strikers playing the way they are, the level of intensity on a game-by-game, a play-by-play, a quarter-by-quarter time frame, it's pretty amazing, Philly.
I mean, look, I've been calling games for the Strikers / Fury for a number of seasons right now. Last year, they won three games over the course of an entire 24. Had it not been for Marco Fabian competing for the Golden Boot, it was the worst season in franchise history, no question. But they've made it so much more competitive. They're 6-6-1 right now, and this past weekend, they had themselves two games against the Tacoma Stars. You want to talk about rough scheduling? You're playing in Tacoma on a Saturday night, and then less than 24 hours later, you're playing against Tacoma again at home. The scheduling, rough.
Brutal.
And both teams sat significant players out. I mean, that first game on Saturday against Tacoma and Empire, a game that went into overtime, no Munir Alami, no Marco Fabian, no Ciro Oliveira, no Andy Reyes. I mean, they were missing so many players. And Tacoma took very big advantage of it. I mean, they too were without a couple of players. No Chris Toth, no Nick Pereira. You could argue that they just come back from United States Men's National Beach Soccer Training Camp. But Alessandro Canali was there, so that doesn't necessarily apply. But in the first period, what seemed to be three goals for Tacoma and a commanding lead didn't stick around for too long, did it?
No, it did not. And to see the Strikers come back and do what they did to Tacoma after Tacoma just put it to them, you know, putting up three goals right away, the Strikers of yesteryear, last year, would not be able to have come back from this. But they fought, they dug out, and they end up getting multiple goals to go to get up and to, you know, they end up losing in overtime. But man, to come back like this, Onoo Obasi has got these guys playing at a different level, Philly.
Yeah, the loss is unfortunate. But yeah, I mean, if you look at a glass half full perspective, they did this without several of their trailblazers. And the players right. that scored are players that you would normally not count on for goals. I mean, Harold Hansen jumps between the Empire Jets and the Empire Strikers. Hansen had a brace. Not only did he score the first goal for the Strikers in the second quarter, he ended up getting the equalizer on there. So that was huge. He had himself a two-goal game. Emmanuel Aguirre, mainly brought in for defensive purposes. Last year, had a career year in terms of goals scored. This season, he's already doing it. He scored two goals there. Randy Martinez, we'll be mentioning his name in the second game. He had two goals in between the two games as well. This is a kid that came to a tryout, somehow impressed the coaching staff, and made the team. So while they did not get the dub, they took Tacoma to overtime. Nobody did anything in overtime, and the game was won in a shootout. Strikers couldn't score any goals. Tacoma obviously did, and that's the end of the ball game. So what happens is in Major Arena Soccer League, we have a point system. And Tim, did you want to explain that real quick or do you want me to?
Yeah, sure. So what it works, it very is similar to some of the other pro sports leagues that we have, like the NHL. When you go into a shootout, it does count as an overtime loss, but you still get a point even for that overtime loss. So it's not the W, but it still is a point, and every point counts when you're fighting down for the playoffs. And right now, the Strikers are in good position to make these playoffs at the half, just over the halfway point of the season, Philly.
Yep, 3 points for a win. Both teams get a point for going in overtime, but obviously the team that wins in overtime salvages the second point. So you are 100% correct on that. And yeah, Strikers would end up with 26 shots to Tacoma's 20. That was that. But you fast forward less than 24 hours later, under the bright lights of Toyota Arena, the Strikers offensively had their biggest and most explosive output of the season. Their high water mark was 10 prior to this past Sunday. They put 12 on Tacoma, and they absolutely just rattled them. It was an interesting and entertaining game. We'd have a hat trick from both Stinson and Munir Alami. But the most important thing that took place in that game, Tim, the Strikers finally were able to convert on power plays. They were abysmal, about 13% going in to that, going into last Sunday. They converted 2 out of 3. The problem is Tacoma scored 3 goals on their power play as well. And the challenge flag, by the way, the challenge flag that the Stars threw on there resulted in at least 2 goals for Tacoma. So an interesting contest, nevertheless, but what a performance by both Stinson and Alami. And we had a goalkeeper goal. Why don't you walk us through that one, Tim?
Yeah, it's when the goalkeepers score, it's really, really fun. You get these, you know, we've been doing this. Coach Obasi has been pushing the goalkeeper forward the entire time. But when you get a goalkeeper that looks like a striker, like what happened when you can get to the yellow line and just rip one like is happening in this game. I mean, you were on the call, Philly. I heard your call and you were jumping up and down in the booth, man. It was awesome.
A mere 10 seconds. And it's so funny because it's so similar to how Brandon Gomez scored a goal starting the second quarter, seconds into coming in. Yeah. A golazo, 10 seconds to be precise. And then Orozco jumps into the stands and kisses his mom. That was pretty cool,
that
too.
That was the best. He didn't. I absolutely love that. He jumped around. He's doing the Empire Leap. It was fantastic. You know, he's inside and he jumps in, kisses his mom. He's got everybody grabbing and jumping on him in the stands. It was pretty cool, Philly.
Yeah, it was super cool. There's video of it. You got to check it out. Surprising to get carded though, because I remember we're talking a long time ago, Tim. When I was in the stands as a fan, when the Ontario Fury played, I remember defender Thiago Gonçalves jumped into the stands after scoring a goal and proposed to what would become his fiance. I believe he was given a red card and wasn't allowed back in that game. So fortunately for the Strikers, they were able to keep Brian Orozco on there. But now you got goals by both Gomez and Orozco. Clayson De Lima, it's your turn next. But the Strikers end up winning the game by a score of 12-5. It was neck and neck for a little while, but 4 goals in the fourth quarter sealed the deal. And that puts the team in a really good mental headspace, because next up, the reigning, defending, back-to-back MASL champion Chihuahua Savage coming into town for not just one, but 2 games at Toyota Arena.
Yeah, back-to-back on February 2nd and the 5th. The 2nd is a Sunday afternoon game, late afternoon. It's a 4:05 kick time. And then then Chihuahua sticks around for a few days, and they play them again on Wednesday at 6:35. Get your tickets to this one, because if you haven't seen Chihuahua play, you've only seen them on TV or on YouTube or whatever it is, you know, you got to see these guys in person, because they're fun to watch. And I think with the way the Strikers are playing, I think this is going to be a much more competitive game than what Chihuahua normally does, because with Chihuahua has not been the dominant team last year. Last year, you got to remember, they went undefeated, and they're not doing that.
Monterey went undefeated.
But Chihuahua took care of everybody last year. but they're not doing it with such authority as they are this year.
They're a team that's undefeated at home. They've won all 8 games. So they're good on that small-sided turf at Corner Sport Arena. It's been a little more difficult for them in the bigger stadiums, as we saw their game against Kansas City. They lost 5-2. Couple quick storylines before we wrap up that make this game intriguing. The last time the Strikers did win, March the 7th, 2023, against the Savage, a game in which Frank Tayu would score 4 goals, but Jorge Rios Pareja would score 3. He is back and fully healthy, and this will be a matchup of four of the highest scorers in the league. Chihuahua brings in Jorge Rios with 16 goals and Hugo La Roca Puentes with 13. Strikers, of course, have Marco Fabian with 16 goals, Justin Stinson at 14. So take a look. These are the two highest scoring teams in the league. The Chihuahua Savage, 118 goals. Number 2, believe it or not, the Empire Strikers with 84. So that wraps that up. Check that out. Now we transition on over to Angel City FC. We had a really amazing interview with sporting director Mark Parsons. That was led, of course, by Timmy Kay and Nina Kay. No relation, but they had a great interview. So let's go to that really quickly, and then we'll be back for a little bit more afterwards.
Our guest today is at the epicenter of the growth of professional women's soccer in North America and, dare we say, the world. Hailing from England, he is the brand new sporting director of Angel City FC, having previously excelled as a head coach in the NWSL with both the Washington Spirit and the Portland Thorns, whom he led to 2 NWSL Shields and 1 NWSL Championship during his 6 years in Oregon. He is the 2016 NWSL Coach of the Year and also the former head coach of the Netherlands Women's National Team. It is such a joy and an honor to have with us the new sporting director of ACFC. Welcome to Soccer in 60, Mr. Mark Parsons.
Well, thank you and good afternoon. I'm taking that screen recording of my intro. I'm just playing that whenever I talk in front of the team from now on.
No problem. I'll also volunteer to come and do it in person whenever you need it.
Even better. Thank you for that warm welcome.
Absolutely. So we did mention in the intro that you have made a name for yourself as a coach in the NWSL. Now you've made the transition from being a coach into the front office with Angel City. What were some of the key selling points and maybe even some of the unique challenges that made you excited about this opportunity and about testing yourself in a new role?
Yeah, well, over my course of my career, I've been a head coach who's also had either been officially a GM as well or had a lot of GM responsibilities. And the truth is, I've loved both sides, building the team and the staff, managing high performance across departments, keeping everyone connected, scouting, recruitment, the development of staff and players. These are things I've been very passionate about and always involved with. And then, of course, coaching. And now as the game's evolved, I feel like you can't do it all and you have to choose. And 2 years ago, when I first discussed the option of my family that I wanted to move in this direction, I was distracted for a little bit and now I've redirected my focus. I'm in the exact role I should be in, I want to be in, where I'm supposed to be at the club. The never dreamt of being able to be at a club like this in Los Angeles, but also the current status of this club, which I'll touch on. I'm in the place I'm supposed to be, I'm in the role I'm supposed to be, and I'm very fortunate to join a great organization, you know, what Julie Ehrman and a lot of people have done and these players have done, but also with Willow and Bob coming in as controlling ownership. It's a very exciting time and I'm pumped to be here, and it's been a very intense 2 weeks in trying to, while getting the team on the pitch and training, also trying to improve, you know, any areas we can before things get too fast here.
Absolutely. So based on what you've learned during the years of success you helped shape as a member of the Portland Thorns, what would you say key ingredients are to a women's professional soccer club thriving, not just on the field, but in the community and within the broader national and international pro sports landscape?
Yeah, I think you have to connect and relate to your community, your the culture of where you're at. I mean, for me, I feel a perfect fit with LA because I've experienced the match day in this stadium. I've seen the electricity and the energy of the fan base and how I see soccer, where it's about dominating the opponent, being in their half, around their goal, and then being aggressive when you defend and not letting them out of their half. That matches what I believe this stadium deserves. But also when I speak to Julie, who says, I want my team to be controlling. And I hear, and I speak to Willow, and she says, I want energy all over the pitch all the time. This aligns to who I am, but this aligns to what this fan base deserves. And when I asked the players on day one, when we met here a week ago, what connects this community to our style of play? And one player said, it's a vibrant city, and we have to dive into that and represent that as one example. So yeah, for me, it's about being real and authentic to where you are. And then when I'm speaking to current players or future players, current staff, or of course, right now, important process with the head coach, future staff, they're all very passionate and connected to the reach of the community and how the club has built the relationships with the community. For me, when I spoke to the club for the first time, we've also shared an organization that wants to be successful, but also wants to be connected to communities, very important. And I've been very, very lucky to have that while I was in Portland for 6 years. And now I'm a completely different beast. You know, this club has been world leading off the field. And I'm excited that I've been able to come into this role and play a key role with great people of helping us be world leading on the field. And yeah, I'll be very honest that in 3, 4, 5, 10 years, if I've been successful, what we'll say about Angel City is, wow, what a great soccer team who also have a great fan base and community outreach and brand. Right now, of course, it's, wow, what a great club. And they're really cool at soccer. Hopefully we can switch that round when people think of us. And look, we're not wasting any time. We're getting to work, and the team and the coaching staff and the players are doing a super job so far in preseason. And we're just trying to do some little things before the season kicks off. And then we start thinking about medium and long term on how we can make sure we are, we're moving in the right direction and fighting to be in the biggest games of the season.
Yeah, I love that, Mark, that you're bringing that type of passion and energy to it, because the town does need it, right? The Angel City does need it. So you mentioned that you're super hard at work, and let's talk about the big news that was announced yesterday. ACFC has extended the contracts of the Thompson sisters, Alyssa and Giselle, and at 20 and 19, there are two bright young stars of the game who hail from Los Angeles and have both represented their country, with Alyssa having played at the U.S. senior national team. What does it mean for Angel City to have these two players with the club for a significant amount of time going forward?
Yeah, it's absolutely huge for us, but also for the community here in this stadium to be able to see these top talents. Alyssa and Giselle had interest from all over the world, and inside the NWSL is unbelievably competitive. To make sure that we keep these great athletes, but great people here. Technical director Mark Wilson and assistant GM Matt Wade led and closed this whole process. It was done before I walked in the building. Of course, we're only announcing it today. So, when I talk about my excitement of joining the organization, I know I'm joining a lot of great people and staff. And then when I think of Alyssa and Giselle, who've just returned from the national team, you know, them and their family and their friends, I'm sure, are very excited they get to see them. And then what our responsibility is to them and every other player is to make sure we're giving the best opportunity for them to develop, to perform, and of course what everyone wants to be doing, which is fighting for trophies. And we've made a good start to that, obviously, in preseason. But the biggest and most important thing, what Julie and Willow and a lot of people have been working on, is this new high performance center here, which is the best and biggest I've ever seen in my life of 20 years of the women's game. When you're Alyssa and Giselle or anyone else and you see and feel this for the first time, I think things get a little bit easier to commit, you know, for a total of 4 years. So we're really pumped. But I do want to say that we have a responsibility to reward their faith in us in supporting their development and fighting for trophies. And that's our aim. And while I wish I could say that will be ready for tomorrow or next week, the reality, things do take time, but we're heading in the right direction. And Phil, we're going to be, I think LA is going to be pretty excited about us this year.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that performance center is amazing. We ran a B-roll of it last week on the show and showed a lot of the amenities, and just, we're pumped about it too. So shortly after coming on board with Angel City, you know what? I'm going to let Nina take this one because she's got the better insight on this one. Nina, take it away.
There are questions the fans need to know. And we did talk about you, Mark, before you came onto this show. And you know, I was passionate about your response here, but shortly after coming on board with ACFC, you went on the record saying that it's more important to find the right head coach for the team as opposed to rushing the process. Of course, we don't expect you to tell us which potential candidates you're talking to unless you want to, but perhaps you can offer some insight on what key qualities someone would need to possess in order to be a viable candidate.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm very passionate about the role that I'm in, that we in all across all sporting departments are set up to make sure the head coach is as successful as possible. And I've got a very clear strategy and idea how we will do that, to the point where if we know the head coach and done our homework, and we can see the top qualities that we don't need to support, but then we also see the other areas that maybe they aren't as good or qualified, my job is to make sure the people around the head coach, we tick those boxes to give these players and this team the best environment possible. Yeah, look, we're in the process. To answer your question, I would say it has to be a top elite soccer leader, a soccer coach who breathes and loves having the main idea of how to play this game and knows how to transfer this idea onto the players and the staff and this team. Look, culture will always be at the foundation of wherever I am building a high-performance environment, because if you don't have culture, everything is very, very difficult. And I'm talking about culture is how we treat each other. And I would say that as we're going through these candidate process, you know, I'm saying to them, the football idea that I've provided you is who we are, and you're in this process because we believe you can deliver that football idea, soccer idea. However, we're hiring the soccer expert to take care of that with the support of everyone. The things you may hear, and of course, I can't wait to talk soccer and be involved in this, but the things that I'm going to be most sensitive is our culture and how you treat people and how people treat each other, the development of our talents, because developing players means the team develops, means we win, but also it's a responsibility we have. It's a retention tool to keep players. It's a recruitment tool to get them. But also how your involvement is in recruitment. Are you open to us being a medium and long-term viewed club of, we want to know, I'll give you an example. In previous round Portland, we had the opportunity to, we brought in a young player called Ellie Carpenter at the age of 17. She played 2 years. She's a top young talent from Australia. And the time came when Olympique Lyon made an offer, and financially it made everything make sense. Now, we had been recruiting another player called Natalia Cuica for 2 years. And because we had done the homework and we were ready and prepared, we could transfer the player Ellie Carpenter for a big fee at the time. And then we brought in Natalia Cuica on a free in transfer fee, which meant we were able to transition took care of the short term, but also the medium and long term. So the head coach needs to understand that we're a club that the head coach has to make that call on who's going to be here. But there is an army of people of high intelligent processes, making sure we have the right people and the right character at the head coach's beck and call. So less about soccer actually, but culture development and recruitment, that the head coach knows we want to be able to put them in the best place to succeed. We've had good conversations. We'd love to have someone here by the end of preseason. It will be probably by the end of preseason, or it could be the middle of the summer. They're the two extremes, because the European leagues finish in the summer. And if it's someone coming from Europe, then that will be the solution. But we also have a lot of North American candidates or people that are available right now. It's just way too early to push in any direction on timeline. The team have been set up incredibly well. The technical staff, the interim head coach, Sam Leite, they're all doing a tremendous job. And what we know is it's for the preseason right now. And when there's an update, everyone will have the update.
Yeah, I love the way that you're taking that responsibility on, Mark, you and the club, and you mentioned an army of people, and that's the way it really should be. And I love the fact that the middle term, the long term, and that's okay. So,
Tim, can I jump in? I forgot something critical.
Of course. Oh.
Willow was in the office for the cutting, the ribbon cutting. And we're in a conversation and I think we talked about timeline and we just gave an update. And Willow said, something I learned over the years, it's not important to be first, it's important to be right. And that's just alignment when we talked about why am I here? Because I'm not interested in getting a quick decision made. I know we all want that settled, but the right person that is the best person for our context and our players right now, with the view of taking us to a place that we've never been. So we'll take our time. The best person is the goal. And I feel we're already taking important steps to get towards that answer.
I love it.
And you've talked a lot about a bunch of players and how we're going to take our time here, but you know, the offseason's also brought several high-profile roster departures, including goalkeeper Didi Haricic, defenders Jasmine Spencer and Merritt Mathias, midfielder Maggie Doherty-Howard, and forwards Katie Johnson and Messiah Bright. There have been a few key re-signings, as we've mentioned, and the addition of Alana Kennedy, but it seems that more signings are needed. In your view, what are the most pressing roster needs at this time?
Yeah, actually, my quickest way of saying it is, I think the team is close. I understand last year or the year before, the feeling could be they're a long way away. My feeling is the team is close. And I think we have a lot of important talents. Or if I was on another organization, I would be calling Angel City to try and get a lot of talents. I really believe we have top talent. But we do need to complement them, not just with abilities on the field. I think we also have to complement what we have here in character and leadership and culture. So we're working hard on that. You will have an announcement from us in the next week about an international signing. Again, someone that the work has mainly been done before I got here, which is a very important addition and versatile player. We are in the market in the NWSL to see if we can bring, there's one or two players we feel can help us right now from the league. We're getting close to one of those options. And of course, there are many others that we're in conversations to see. I think I'd summarize that we will be a little bit active if we know the talent of the player helps right now. Most importantly, does the character of the person and the teammate qualities add to our environment and support the direction that we want to take? If the answer is yes, we're going to be busy. And if not, then that's why we have the summer and we have off season next year. I think we need a little bit of work. Everyone will say maybe we need a lot, and the roster, the number of the roster right now, or the holes because of the people that have left. I assure you, we are much calmer than everyone else out there because we know a little bit more of what's coming and we believe in that. And yeah, when the season begins, I think it will be clear that we have a fantastic group to go and be competitive this year. And for me, be able to put ourselves in a position to fight for the biggest games of the year. At the same time, getting the team ready for the beginning is just one priority, you know, to continue to support our players and the development for them to grow here. Now they have this performance center. And then, of course, we have to always, I mean, that's why I'm in this role. I honestly think about retaining talent and recruiting talent more than any other aspect of this job. Same with Noah's coaching. How do we make sure we keep our best people and the best talent? How can we attract the best people and the best talent? And I used to do it with 10 or 20% of my time and energy, and now I get to do it with 100%. And the dream is to give this head coach and the technical staff the best opportunity to be them and have success with this team. And I'm loving every minute so far.
You know, Mark, I love hearing this. I'm going to steal a little bit of Willow and say, you know, it's better to get it right and then to be quick. It sounds like Angel City has made it right. So everybody, Mr. Mark Parsons, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for joining us today. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim, Nina. It's a pleasure to join. And if I get that intro every time, then I got to come in once a week to give my energy levels up.
Love to have you, Mark. Thanks, sir. Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Heck of an interview. I mean, what an interesting and bit of information. Like, we talked to the top guy, Tim. How was it? How'd you feel?
You know what? I said it right at the end of the interview, and Willow, Willow Geiger, one of the owners of Angel City, really said it, and Mark really hit the nail on the head when they said that no matter how long it takes, they're going to hire the right people. And I think that Angel City really did hire the right people with sporting director Mark Parsons. I think he's going to be fantastic for the club for a very long time.
Yeah, not to be confused with Alan Parsons, the Alan Parsons Project, who created that amazing introductory theme song to the Chicago Bulls warm-up. Now, that being the case, Tim, I know we're going to your favorite segment, buddy, Orange County Soccer Club. What's going on behind the orange curtain?
Okay, so again, kind of like the Galaxy and the LAFC, there has been a lot of working behind the scenes. There's not been a lot of rumors. However, there has been a great signing by Orange County Soccer Club this past week in the name of Liam McKinnon. You may know him if you've been bouncing around USL One, because he is the 2024 USL League One Player of the Year. Originally coming out of Switzerland, in this past season, he's got in 34 matches, dude put in 23 goals and 8 assists. So when you can average getting on the score sheet almost every game, the Orange County is very, very lucky to get this guy on schedule, get him on the contract, and put him inside of Championship Stadium down in Irvine. With that, there's not a whole lot else coming out of Orange County. I know that my sources are talking to me about some stuff next week, so be prepared for some extra stuff as we get closer and closer to the season. The season's less than 5 weeks away, so it's going to be super fun watching these guys play. And their schedule, they've got this home opener on March 8th. They do have multiple games in the preseason. But be ready when the Oakland Roots come into town on that home opener on March 8th. You're going to see a lot of really fun players coming out. You're going to see Ethan Zubak. You're going to see Bryce Jamison. You're going to see some very, very high-quality soccer. And Oakland is no slouch. Oakland, they kind of suffered down the stretch at the end of last season. But Orange County, with Coach Danny Stone, is really, really prepared to take this season on. They still need to put on probably about 6 or 8 more signings, so be ready for a flurry over the next few weeks before the season starts.
Oh, God. I mentioned earlier that I was hungry when you talked about a little bit of food. You say flurry. Now all I can think of is McFlurry. I need to take a trip to McDonald's and get myself some manja, some 6-piece nuggets, a double cheeseburger. I'm hungry, Tim.
Oh, man. Then I won't tell you that but I was making a little snacky snack earlier, so I won't give up the ghost, and I won't make it any worse for you. But, again, go down to orangecountysoccer.com, get your tickets, hang out with me in the supporter section at the north end of that stadium. It's going to be a great time to cheer on some Orange County soccer here in this coming season.
Oh, you sold me until I said I had to hang out with you. Now I don't want to go.
I'll be on the left side. You could be on the right. But, I'll buy you a beer, buddy.
Sold to the man. You're the man with the gray beard. You're dragging me to Orange County, kicking and screaming. I won't be kicking and screaming. But anyway,
it'll be a good time, Billy, my man.
Yeah, we got to go. And speaking of which, before we go, we got to talk a little bit of Strike Force. And you know what that means? The return of the one, the only, Nina Kiefer.
What's up, boys? Happy to be back and talking about our amazing Empire Strikers. Once again, we're bringing you Strike Force, of course, highlighting the top 3 players and 1 super sub from the Empire Strikers from January 23rd through January 29th. And these boys have been busy, but there's plenty more to come. Let's dive into it. Robert Palmer taking in first place for his defensive efforts. In addition to defense, where he had 5 blocks, he also walks away with 3 assists in the game on the 25th. And then Brian Orozco, our goalkeeper, 1 goal scored. I know y'all hinted at this earlier, but holy cow. And then 0 goals against in 30 minutes. And then in that third place spot, Justin Stinson, 3 goals scored and 11 shots on goal on the game on the 25th. Just absolutely phenomenal stats from our boys.
Yeah, wow. It's just incredible when Marco Fabian, one of the true leaders of the team, that's leading the team in goals. He's the super sub. So you know that the entire team is diving into this. And the game that Robert Palmer had was just incredible.
The week 8 defensive player of the year, Berto, I think, is number 2 in the league in his statistical category. Blocks, might as well say that he's addicted to blocks. But Nina, I'm thoroughly disappointed in this list.
Oh, why, sir?
You want to know why? Berto, give the flowers. Always give it to the man who's defending. Brian Orozco, no doubt about it. And I love me some stinger action. But where in the world is Munir Alami?
I knew you were going to say that.
Career hat trick in the Major Arena Soccer League. How did we miss the rookie, the Moroccan international? I'm going over this list. I've seen Fabian. I've seen Stinson on this list. I have not once seen Munir Alami, especially, and all things considered, a hat trick. Where's Munir Alami?
No, he's doing absolutely fantastic. I love the kid. Like, he got the interview after the match at the last game, but he did miss 2 open nets, so I had to dock him like a little point. And I really hope he's not listening to this because I love him to death and he's crushing it. Like, he needs to just keep going. He's doing absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. But you know, I got to agree with Philly on this one.
Sorry.
I'm going on Philly on this one. I'm going on Philly one. I think we should have put it, you know, I do like the stinger too, but we, you know, Marco doesn't have to make every list that we put up here.
And neither just, look, we're going to see. My money's on this. We'll see Stinson and Fabian and probably Berto and more than likely Orozco on this list again. But truthfully, with the way he's playing, we'll probably see Alami as well. Remember this. He scored the very first goal of the season for the Strikers, the rookie, off of that amazing header pass from Quinton Swift down against Chihuahua. And fine, he might have had 2 sitters, 2 open nets. I get it. Fine. But at the same time, you know, it is a rookie. It is his first hat trick. He is one of the top scorers for the Strikers. Just saying.
You know, maybe he'll be number one.
Or we could have even said Harold Hansen. Harold Hansen had a brace.
Harold Hansen did great.
We could have even argued Randy Martinez in his sophomore season, who scored in 2 consecutive games. We could even say Emmanuel Aguirre. I think the most important thing we're taking from this is that there's a lot of players playing very well this season and a lot to choose.
What we're learning is we need to do best 11 or something.
Well, I, like you said, Philly, I think this is much different than what we were seeing a year ago, right? The team's sitting on 84 goals through 13 games. This is just not happening last year. And so the fact that we're having arguments about Alami not making the top 4, and he's the guy, one of the guys with the hat trick. So I think it's the right direction that the team's going.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it. Folks, I mean, this is about all the time that we have on the show today. Thank you so much for catching and hanging out with us on another episode of Soccer in 60. Don't forget to subscribe to us on the Apples, on the Spotify's, on the YouTubes, and that YouTubes are at the Empire Strikers, strikerswithay.com. Tell your mom, tell your friends, tell your friends' friends, tell your mom and all her friends, tell her circle of friends, your dads, the grandpas, the great grandpas. Let them all know that Soccer in 60 is dope. It's wild. It's fun. We got a good cast and we ain't going nowhere. We're going to be back next week for another amazing episode with some more amazing interviews. On behalf of myself, Philly, Timmy K, and Nina K, Auf Wiedersehen. We'll see you next week.